Take this quiz. All right, everybody ready? You don't need a pencil and paper for this. First question. Name the five wealthiest people in the world. How many of you could name one? Okay, two, three. It gets pretty tough after that, doesn't it? How about the last five Heisman Trophy winners? If you're a sports person, maybe you'll get one or two of these. Okay, how about the last five winners of the Miss America pageant? Five people who've won the Nobel or Pulitzer Prize? Maybe a little easier. Maybe you get one or two. Okay. How about the last three Academy Award winners for Best Actor or Actress? I don't suspect too many Bible students would get this one. All right. Well, since you didn't do very well on that quiz, how about this one? Name five teachers who aided your journey through school. How many of you could do that? A lot of hands go up. Five people who taught you something worthwhile. Five people you enjoy spending time with. Every hand is up. Five people who've made you feel appreciated and special. Three friends who have helped you through a difficult time. Well, why did so many more hands go up in the last quiz than the first one? People that make a difference in your life are not the ones that have the most money or the most fame or are the most well-known or the people that have gained the most awards in their lifetime. The people that make a difference in your life are the ones who care, about you. Brethren, that's what this is about. It's about caring for each other. Take a look around and you see those who really care for you. Jesus knew that. The love of a friend was something even special to Jesus. In John 11, we read a certain man was sick, Lazarus of Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. It was Mary who anointed the Lord with ointment and wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was sick. So the sisters sent word to him, saying, "Lord, behold, he whom you love is sick." Can you imagine if you were there with Jesus and you were known as one who Jesus loved? And this love is not the love that we would think of in the broad context. This is from Strong's 5368. It's the phileo. We say phileo, it's phileo if you're a Greek. You'd say phileo love. And that's the love of a friend, to be a friend to. It's someone who's fond of another individual. Affection for someone. It's a sentiment. It's feelings that we have for one another. We get the word philanthropy from this. People that have love for their own kind. Now, there's a lot of people that are philanthropists that hate individuals, but they love to give their money away. Or where I come from, Philadelphia, which is called the City of Brotherly Love. Now, it probably should be renamed. But the idea, I think, when William Penn set it up was correct. But that's the idea of love. It's the love, this friendship kind of love, to say, I care about you. There's a less personal kind of love, and not detrimental, but it's one we talk about a lot, and that's the one you know called agapeo, or we call it agape in the English transliteration. But note how Strong defines this. While this love, G25, the agapeo love, is wider, embracing especially the judgment and deliberate assent of the will as a matter of principle, duty, and propriety. The two thus stand related very much, but the former, phileo, being chiefly of the heart, and the latter, agapeo, of the head. And we can define love all kinds of ways, but that's it. And both these are important. Not one that's superior to another, I think, but each is important in its own way. And the special kind of love and affection that we have one for another as friends, that's the kind of love that I want to focus on today. We can love the brotherhood, and many people do. I send my love to the brethren. Well, you don't know all those brethren, but you send your love, don't you? And John tells us that one of the signs that we have passed from death to life is because we love the brethren. And we love them in a broad context because they are brethren, but we don't know them individually. Jesus said in John 13, 34 and 35, I give you this new commandment that you love one another even as I have loved you. You also love one another. He's talking about the context of love as brethren, as a group together. You know that you are my disciples if you have love. You have this mental assent that says, I am going to practice love for my brethren. 1 Peter 1, 22 and 25 has an interesting slant on this. In Strong's Concordance, reads, Seeing ye have purified your souls in obeying the truth through the Spirit unto unfeigned love. Now that's the Philadelphia love. That's the personal kind of love of the brethren. Unfeigned, real love. Do I really care for you? See that ye love one another with a pure heart. Where's that mental assent that says, I'm loving them for a purpose because we are in the same walk together and we are helping each other through this walk. So the phileo, the Philadelphia, that affection like Jesus felt for Lazarus, like we should feel for those we know well in the brotherhood, that's built on the whole premise that we're walking this way together. If we were out on the street and we'd never assembled together, we would pass each other by and never understand who was who. But the fact that we're in this way together, and we come together in conventions, we come together in all kinds of ways, there's a relationship that's built, but it must go beyond that. We must pursue beyond just this broad love context and try to capture this idea of friendship, the way Jesus cared personally for those that were with him. So how would we define this? The brotherhood, the agapeo brotherhood, the common cause that we have all together. Jesus told the disciples that they were working for a purpose. They're working for the purpose of the kingdom. They were sacrificing their lives so that they could bring blessings to all men. Brethren, when we look at the plan, we think about things like the resurrection we heard about this morning. It's true. That is a powerful motivator. Think about the opportunity to bring back millions and billions of people into really knowing a relationship with God. It's a cause we're in together that we're all giving our lives for. And you know, there's only one bride. There's not 144,000 brides. There's just one. We're all in this together. We all face the same perils. You're seeing some pictures of brethren from International Convention, and they share the same perils we do as we go through our way. They have the same persecutions when they stand for the truth. It's a global feature of our brotherhood. But that cause in which we're going can only be appreciated by others that are walking in the same way. When we create the relationships on an individual level, that's, brethren, what helps us endure. We can experience the love of the brethren, but it's that individual relationships that we can reach out and grab a hand and touch someone that knows and feels what we're going through. That's what helps us endure the difficulties of the way. And it's not someone to dump on, to say, you got all these troubles I want to tell you about, but it's to have someone have a helping hand. Someone to reach out and be there when we need them. Someone with whom we can share bereavement. We can share financial embarrassment. Our cares for our family. The anxiety we go through in suffering. Those are the things that we need. Proverbs 17:17 says, A friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for adversity. Let me tell you a story about Ian O'Gorman of Oceanside, California. It was a young man, about 12 years old, that developed cancer. As part of the chemotherapy treatment, he's 23, lost all his hair, of course. And he showed up bald at school, 12 years old. The next day, when he came in, 30 students around him sitting in that classroom were all bald, too. And the teacher, 50 years old, was bald as well. They formed a group called the Bald Eagles. And when they were asked, why did they do this? They said, we just wanted to make him feel better. Brethren, we have a commandment from Paul that says, bear one another's burdens and thereby fulfill the law of Christ. Now that was an example from the world. Think about how we bear each other's burdens. Picture you see here, of course, is Gretchen on the left by the sister. At least one of you knows, I know because I talked to her earlier. This is Sister Leocadia Sablik from Poland. Of course, Joanna and Marge know her very well because she lived at their house for quite a while. That's where Gretchen first met her. But some years ago, when my mother had fallen and broken her hip, we lived far away from there. My sister could not handle it, and she was going to have to go into a nursing home. I gave a testimony at a convention in New York. In fact, I think it was the Labor Day convention, saying that my mom was in difficult times, and she was going to have to, and we were going to have to do something because she couldn't be at home recuperating, but she wanted to stay in her house. All of you know that it's important as you get older. You'd like to stay in your house, the comfort that you have there. That evening, I got a call from Leocadia's sister, or Leocadia's daughter, Elzbieta, who's in the New York class. And she said, my mother is willing to come over from Poland and stay with your mom. And my mom was Polish, of course, spoke Polish very well. And so Leocadia flew from Poland, stayed there for 6 months, helping my mom so she could recover, stay in her home, and get back. Brethren, that's the kind of thing that you'll only see, the sacrifice from the brethren. That's the kind of reaching out. That's the kind of bearing each other's burdens that we get with a kind of friendship and relationships that we should be developing amongst our brethren. We can stand off at a distance, but reaching out when someone needs a helping hand, as Paul says, to bear a burden, that's the kind of love that Jesus felt for those around him, and that's the kind of love he was talking about when we talk about this individual love of friendship for the brethren. Ecclesiastes 4:9 tells us, two are better than one because they have a good return for their labor. When you think about sharing your sorrows, and you can share them with an individual that you know cares, that individual takes half that sorrow away. And if the individual is someone who really cares for you, if you have the joys, your joys are doubled when you share them with them. So let's talk about how do we be a better phileo. If that's for me, I'm not here. How do we be a better phileo brother or sister? How do we better reach out and become that reliable person that's willing to shave their head for another brother or sister? Three A's: acceptance, approval, and appreciation. Acceptance. Brethren, let's not fashion a spiritual straitjacket with a brother and say, you know, this is the way you must be. The liberty that we're given in Jesus gives us the opportunity to stay close together without the necessity that we intellectually think all alike. When we fashion that spiritual straitjacket, we put a wall between each other. Our love and that love for the brethren individually must go beyond that. The more accepting we can be of someone, really without constraints on it, the more opportunity we'll have to influence their behavior. You don't like what someone's doing? Win them over and change their behavior. What did Jesus do? Confidence that people will build in you and trust that people build because they know you're a true friend gives us the ability to offer advice. gives us the ability to discuss disagreements, to influence in a way we couldn't if we fashion this spiritual straitjacket that says this is the way you must be. Romans 15:7, Paul says, accept one another then, just as Christ accepted you in order to bring praise to God. Now, how did Christ accept us? Think about Jesus and the Pharisees. The Pharisees separated themselves from everybody, and they refused to associate with those they considered weaker than themselves. And that was really the reason they hated Jesus. Why in the world would you go to publicans and sinners? These people have no place with us. But it was those that Jesus went to because he knew he could change their behavior. He became their friend first and then influenced them in a positive way. Jesus accepted those that were around him, and he changed their behavior. How? Through his tenderness, through his understanding, not through his condemnation and his judgment. Romans 14:1 says, accept him whose faith is weak without passing judgment on disputable matters. The acceptance must come first. The influence to change comes second. The second A, approval. When you look at others, what do you look at? Now, I always joke with those of you that are men, you can appreciate this. You know, when you get dressed up and everything, and your wife comes up and she's picking off little things off your suit, I say, what are you doing, scanning for flaws? But we can do that with the brethren. We can scan for flaws. On the other hand, we can look for something to approve in those brethren. And you know what? You can let that person know of the things you approve about, and guess what? The number of things you'll see that you approve of is going to grow. It's going to be more than what you think. Oh, I just don't see anything good in that. Well, look, wow, that person is really good at that. That person gives a wonderful prayer. That person is very close to God in their heart. So try this, brethren. If someone really bugs you, try to find something in there that you can approve of. See beyond the things and the conflicts you see. Look inside and see what you can find that you would approve of. Now, I would say you're always going to find more than at least one. And soon, you're going to find several. And it's going to keep growing and growing. And you're going to develop a new relationship that you didn't have, because now you're seeing beyond that surface and you're seeing inside to the things you approve. Peanuts is a great comic strip, and there's a lot of great lessons in there. There was one comic strip where Linus comes to his sister Lucy, and he's got this piece of paper, and he gives it to her, and he says, Lucy, read this. Do you think it's funny? And she's reading. Of course, Lucy's always there, you know, tapping her foot like this, and she's reading, and a big smile comes on her face. And, you know, she says, who wrote this? And he says, he's very proud, Linus. He thinks she's going to really praise it. And he says, well, I did, Lucy. And so she crumbles it up. She throws away. She says, I don't like it at all. And Linus turns around and says, big sisters are the crabgrass in the lawn of life. Brethren, are we somebody's crabgrass? Do we not approve and always find something wrong with whatever we see? Why would we ever want to discourage our brother or our sister? It's not something that should be in our mentality. 1 Thessalonians 5:11 says, therefore, encourage one another and build up one another, just as you also are doing. Paul liked that behavior in people. The third A, appreciation. The definition of appreciation is to raise in value. How valuable are people to you? Remember the quiz we took at the beginning. The people that care for you, that are an intimate part of your life, those are the ones we should appreciate, because they are the ones that mean everything to us. And how can you let them know? Well, we've seen a lot of that with brethren sending notes. Send a note. Tell them you appreciate what they've done. Tell them you appreciate that prayer. Tell them you appreciate the fact that they're struggling hard to come to the meeting every time, that they're an encouragement to you when you see them at a convention. Tell them now. It's like someone said, you know, we like to praise people after they die, and eulogies are wonderful. But tell the people now, tell the brethren now how much you appreciate them and the things that they're doing. Paul did this in Philemon 6:7, that Brian talked about yesterday. Paul says, "For I have come to have much joy and comfort in your love." Paul told them how much they meant. Can you believe that? If you got a letter from the apostle that says, "I have gotten great comfort from your joy and love." What an encouragement that is. Brethren, that word that you pass on to someone may be the only encouragement they have that whole day. Benjamin West was a painter that lived in Pennsylvania, and I've read a lot about him. He's not far from our area. He was there. He was actually King George's artist, but he was there during the kind of founding period of Pennsylvania and the United States. And he was a very religious man. He painted a lot of nice pictures. This was with the Iroquois Indians. And the Indians actually gave him his first paint set, taught him how to paint. But he painted biblical themes, like here you see the return of the prodigal son, the expulsion of Adam and Eve. And when he was a little boy, Wes said, "I used to love to paint, but I was always afraid because my mother, I didn't want to mess up the house. So when she was gone, I would haul out all my paints and start painting and everything like that and make sure I could pick it up before she got home. But one day she got home early, and he had a total mess around that house. And he was really scared. And his mother came in, and she looked around, and she looked at the picture, and she came up, and she gave him a kiss. And she said, "What a beautiful portrait of your sister." He said, "That day I decided I would become a painter because of that encouragement she gave me." Brethren, showing our appreciation for what the brethren have achieved is important. Every day, our brethren are trying to paint a picture of Jesus in their life. You know, what's the last thing we need? Boy, you've made a mess of it. Sure, we make a mess of it. We know we make a mess of it every day. But it's not what we need to hear. It's not what our brethren need to hear. Let's be a benefit to others. Let's be more tender and devoted as a spouse, as a sibling, as a parent. Be a kinder and a caring friend to those that we love. More encouraging to those brethren that are laboring with us in the vineyard. Doing that, we pour that soothing oil on the harsh burns of life that we all endure. Jesus had friends. Let's look at the friends that Jesus had. Jesus had friends that were draining. Jesus had friends that were just neutral. Jesus had replenishing friends. Let's look at the friends who drained Jesus. Matthew 9:18-38. We have three accounts. I'm going to read them very quickly. While he was saying these things to them, a synagogue official came and bowed down before him and said, "My daughter has just died, but come and lay your hand on her and she will live." And a woman who had been suffering from a hemorrhage for 12 years came up behind him and touched the fringe of his cloak. As Jesus went on from there, two blind men followed him crying out, "Have mercy on us, Son of David." Can you imagine getting pestered like that? Those things drained Jesus. They wore him out. And so Luke tells us in 4:42, when day came, Jesus left and he went to a secluded place and the crowds were searching for him. And he came to him and tried to keep him from going away from him, demanding, wanting nothing but his healing. And Jesus did. Look at all the time he spent healing the sick, encouraging those that were downtrodden. He taught the masses, but Jesus even needed relief. Those were draining relationships and draining friends. And then Jesus had another set of friends that were just kind of neutral. John 6 records these for us. 59 says, "These things he taught in the synagogue as he taught in Capernaum. Therefore, many of his disciples, when they heard this," this is a difficult statement. Who can listen to it? "As a result of this, many of his disciples withdrew and we're not walking with him anymore. Those friends were a discouragement to Jesus. And he turned to his disciples and he said, John 6:67, you do not want to go away also, do you? And I think in the Greek we see the tenor, that it was a question of Jesus, a sincere question, because he knew that many of those around him didn't really care. Jesus was looking for those that would go beyond just being curious about him, those that really didn't want to get to know him, they were just fascinated, those that just wanted to pass the time and go on their way and see who he was. But those who would be willing to make a commitment, those who would be willing to reach out to him, were not those that were friends. But Jesus had replenishing friends. John 12, we read about them. When Jesus came to Bethany 6 days before the Passover, came to the home of Mary and Martha, that was Lazarus who was there as well. It was there Mary took a pound of very costly perfume of pure nard, and anointed the feet of Jesus and wiped his feet with her hair, and the house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. 6 days before he knew he was going to die. Where did Jesus go for encouragement? Yes, he prayed to his Heavenly Father, but he reached out to those friends who would replenish him. Mary, Martha, Lazarus, they lifted him up. They helped him. Mary poured oil on his feet. Usually, oil was poured on the head. The servants attended to the feet. More than that, Mary took down her hair in public. Women didn't take down their hair in public. Jesus came there during his greatest time of difficulty because he needed that replenishment. So, brethren, which one of those three kinds of friends do you want to be? If one of the brethren spends a day with us, do they feel drained or built up? Do we add joy to our brethren's life when they're with us? Do we encourage the brethren when they're having difficult times so they call us when they want to be renewed? Do they feel recommitted to the cause that we talked about earlier, remember, after spending that time with us? To get the most out of a relationship, we have to put all we can into it. And that's really the commitment that we make to individuals sitting beside us, sitting behind us, sitting in front of us. Let's talk about three friends in this phileo kind of relationship that we should all seek. I think all of us need someone like a Paul. What was a Paul as a friend? Paul was an older brother, or it can be an older sister, someone that's willing to mentor you, to help you and guide you, someone who's experienced and dedicated, someone who can provide counsel to you when it's needed, someone that provides that counsel without judgment, and more importantly, someone to imitate, those who you can model your life after. Secondly, I think we all need a Barnabas in our life. Barnabas was the soul brother, as we used to say, or sister. You know, it's somebody that's not impressed by you or what you are, or what you do. Someone that can remain a kind of an influence to hold you accountable and tell you when you're going in the wrong direction. We need that. Someone that will really share an honest opinion and not be prone to just tell you what you want to hear. But it's done in that sincere love of improvement. I think we all need that as well. And finally, I think we should have a Timothy in our lives. Timothy is a younger person, someone whose zeal that you can use and build on, someone that you can encourage yourself, someone you can mentor, someone you can help. Remember what Paul said to Timothy, make every effort to come to me soon. For Demas, having loved this present world, has deserted me and gone to Thessalonica. Crescens has gone to Galatia. Titus to Dalmatia. Paul wanted Timothy to bring his cloak and his parchments. He knew he was spending the time that he would in prison, might be his last. And he looked to Timothy as that young person who would help him and help pick up the cause. Well, let's conclude, brethren, with 10 rules. Phileo friendship rules. And I added this in my token of appreciation, showing my appreciation. Brother Kent Humphreys gave a talk at General Convention on this reprint, and I like the points that were in this reprint article, and I think they give us some good guidelines for being a better friend to our brethren. First, don't be a busybody. Don't be a want to know everyone's business. Be there to help. Second, exercise patience with others' faults. You know, even though we know that text in John 8 that Jesus said, let him who is out sin cast the first stone, is probably spurious, the principle behind it is right. We all have troubles and we all have faults. Let's not exercise impatience with others. Don't be touchy or easily offended. You know, if we carry a chip on our shoulder and every little thing offends us, it makes it difficult to build any kind of relationship. And that leads into the next one. Don't demand apologies all the time. Sometimes people just do have a bad day. Don't speak evil of anyone. It's very difficult, but it's true. We need to make sure that we are one that can be trusted on. My son is the greatest at keeping a secret. You won't know anything that anyone has told him. I've tried to find out, believe me, you can't. So, don't show a holier-than-thou attitude. When someone needs advice and someone's looking to you for help, don't pull down your jacket or things and say, oh, okay, I'll give you some good advice. Brethren, we must maintain that level of relationship. We're just like you, and we can help you. I'll reach out. Keep your conscience clear. It's very difficult to be a good friend when you don't have a clear conscience about your own actions. Eighth, understand and apply the principles of divine law. Brethren, it is important that we have a strong background in the doctrines and in the elements of truth so that we can make a sound judgment about proper actions that someone should take that's in trouble and give good advice. Ninth, don't always look for something to criticize. It's a human tendency we have that now, whether it's the media or anything we endure, there's always this tendency to focus on what did they say or do wrong? What were the gaffes they made? Let's not always look for something to criticize. Let's look instead for something to approve. 10th, never show prejudice or envy. When someone has a blessing, share it with them with great joy. And never show prejudice because of where someone comes from, who they are, how long they've been in the truth, whether they're young or old. Those friends can be come at us from a lot of different ways and encouragement. Well, I started out by introducing you to my family, and I'd say I'll end up with giving you the lessons we've learned. We're trying to apply these principles in our life. And very popular T-shirts we have are, you know, friends don't, in our area at least, friends don't let other friends go to Villanova, or other friends don't let friends go to someplace else. I think friends don't leave friends alone. If you have no friends, if you don't have a best friend in the truth, get one. Because that's how the Lord is building you and making you into a relationship. So I've looked at my family and said, how would I characterize them as friends? My daughter Rachel, I would say, when you're a friend, when you're my friend, I share your pain. She really does reach out and understand, and I've seen her cry with others that have it, just like my mom used to be. She shares that kind of characteristic. That's what a friend does. A friend shares your pain, and they mean it. They really share it. My son Aaron, as I mentioned, I characterize him, I'm your friend no matter who you are. What you look like or what you do is irrelevant. I'm your friend, and you can rely on me. My wife, Gretchen, are you a friend in need? I'll be there. If you're ever in trouble and you need help, she's there. So what do I do to characterize the guy on the left? Well, I guess the best characteristic I could say is I get by with a little help from my friends. Brethren, a smile, a word, a touch. And each is simply given to rescue someone from despair or smooth their day of living. Amen.